The Fed's embassy on Wall Street is an iron-barred, neo-Florentine fortress built in the 1920s. Even before completion, it was criticized as so luxurious and lavish that it will make Solomon's Temple of old seem quite cheap in comparison. The building sits atop $195 billion worth of gold in a vault that rests 50 feet below sea level on the bedrock of Manhattan. Carved into the lobby wall, the Fed's mission statement includes some archaic words to furnish an elastic currency, and some still relevant, to unite the resources of many banks for the protection of all. A center of power itself, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York also is a key nexus between the worlds of Wall Street finance and Washington politics. Few dramas in its building have played out as momentously as the events of September 13th and 14th, 2008, when the building played host to the death of Lehman Brothers, the shotgun marriage of Merrill Lynch to Bank of America, and the preparations to effectively nationalize AIG, the nation's largest insurance company. Lehman and Merrill Lynch had been on worry lists around the globe since the Fed had brokered the sale of failing investment bank Bear Stearns to J.P. Morgan Chase 7 months earlier. As the financial rot from the housing market spread during the summer of 2008, Lehman's basic problem was not uncommon: a huge pile of bad real estate loans that it couldn't sell. What was unusual was the size. In just 6 months, it had taken $6.7 billion in losses on its commercial real estate portfolio. Its shares had fallen by 90% since the beginning of the year. Both Paulson, the hyperactive Treasury Secretary, and the New York Fed's coolly analytical president, Tim Geithner, had been fielding calls from Lehman's longtime CEO, Dick Fuld, for months. Even before the firm announced a couple of days after the Bear Stearns rescue that its first quarter earnings were down 57% from the year before, both Paulson and Geithner told him to raise capital or find a buyer. Fuld looked, with all of Wall Street watching intently. At one point, Fuld suggested that Lehman could split into two pieces, putting the rotting real estate assets in a separate entity, if only the government would come up with $4 billion. Lehman had flirted with becoming a bank holding company, a way to wrap itself in the Fed's protective blanket and assure investors that it would always have access to Fed loans in a crunch. The Fed listened, but Geithner, among others, was skeptical that an identity change would solve Lehman's underlying problem. "No naked bank holding companies," he told Lehman. Translation: a change in legal status without a fundamentally different business strategy wouldn't suffice. Paulson, who never thought much of Lehman when he was running Goldman Sachs, found Fuld unrealistically optimistic. But unlike some, even among his own staff, Paulson didn't think the problem was that Fuld was asking too much for his company. Everyone out there knew that Lehman was sitting there. If they wanted to do a deal with Lehman, they weren't going to be constrained by the price Dick was asking, Paulson said later. A last-minute attempt to raise equity from a Korean bank fell through. Lehman's time was running out. Commanders-in-Chief. Just a few days after orchestrating the government takeover of mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, a maneuver that would have consumed all their attention for months in ordinary times, Ben Bernanke and Paulson met for their usual weekly breakfast. This week, they sat in a small, antiques-furnished conference room adjacent to Paulson's large corner office in the Treasury building. In calmer times, the two would have chewed over the surprisingly smooth execution of their plan to seize control of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which were in danger of losing their ability to borrow money because of mounting losses on mortgages they held in their portfolios or had guaranteed. But Lehman pushed itself to the top of the worry list. At mid-morning, Bernanke and Paulson convened a conference call to talk Lehman's strategy with their top lieutenants and Christopher Cox, the former California congressman who was chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission and ostensibly Lehman's regulator. With Lehman clearly struggling for survival, Paulson and Bernanke assured each other and the others on the call that all the companies and traders that did business with Lehman had been given time to protect themselves from a possible Lehman bankruptcy. They comforted themselves that, since the Bear Stearns bailout, the Fed had found new ways to lend to other investment houses that might be hurt by a Lehman collapse. They were wrong. Paulson and Bernanke were directing the entire response of the U.S. government. There had been no high-powered explore-all-the-options meeting at the White House to contemplate a looming problem as significant as Lehman. Oddly, for an administration that had made a habit of interventions and micromanagement throughout the government, Bush and his team had delegated almost unconditional responsibility for managing the Great Panic to the Treasury and the Fed. Paulson called the plays and kept the White House informed, most commonly through phone calls to Keith Hennessy, the economic policy coordinator, or Joel Kaplan, the deputy White House chief of staff. Paulson didn't do email. When the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History later asked for his BlackBerry, Paulson said he didn't have one and gave the museum his overused cell phone. After meeting with Bernanke, Paulson flew to New York on a private plane he paid for himself. He could afford it. He had earned $40 million as Goldman's CEO in 2005 and had sold nearly $500 million worth of Goldman shares accumulated over his 32 years at the firm when he took the Treasury job in 2006. Goldman Sachs had sent so many alumni to positions of power in both Democratic and Republican administrations that it was sometimes called Government Sachs. Paulson had played on the offensive line of the Dartmouth College football team and had a permanently bent little finger on his left hand as a result. After getting an MBA from Harvard, he worked in the Pentagon and later in the Nixon White House as a liaison with the Treasury and Commerce Departments. A Christian Scientist with a passion for nature, Paulson initially worked in Goldman's Chicago office, and he and his wife raised their son and daughter on his family farm in Illinois.